Hey everyone, welcome back to Who's There. I'm your host, Allison. If you're new here, thank you for joining us. This is a podcast where I talk to a new horror fan every week because I hope to destigmatize what it means to be a horror movie fan, because most of us are just regular people who like the adrenaline rush of being scared for some reason, and here we delve into those reasons. I hope everyone is having a great spooky season so far. The Brooklyn Horror Film Festival starts this week, and I'm super excited to attend. But I am also stoked to share my conversation with you this week with the editor-in-chief of Dreads Central, Mary Beth McAndrews. We talk a lot about horror being cathartic, why she loves the rape revenge genre, and what her forthcoming feature film, Bystanders, is about. As always, please take a second to rate and review us wherever you listen to us, and let's get into my conversation with Mary Beth McAndrews. Hey, Mary Beth, how are you?
I'm so good. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for being here. I'm so excited to chat with you. Do you want to start by telling everyone a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Mary Beth McAndrews. I'm currently the editor-in-chief at Dread Central, which is a pretty big horror website. And I'm also the director of the upcoming rape revenge movie Bystanders. I co-host a podcast called Scarred for Life. And I have loved horror since I was a child, and I have been writing about horror in some capacity since college, so for about a decade, but I've been like a professional writer for about 5 years.
Awesome. So first things first, what's your favorite scary movie?
I was listening to backlogs of your podcast and I was like, God damn it, she's going to ask me that question. And I'm always so bad at answering that question because it's so hard for me to pick a favorite, which I'm sure you hear every single time you ask that question. But I think my favorite scary movie is, it changes all the time, but right today I'm going to say Lake Mungo, the 2008 found footage Australian movie.
Oh.
That I think is my favorite scary movie.
I've never had anyone come on here and say that. And it's always one that I'm recommending to people because not that many people have seen it. I've only watched it once, but I love it. I think it's so creepy.
It's so creepy. And like, yes, not everyone loves it, but it is like the perfect example of how to make a really scary movie and also a really sad scary movie. I love when scary movies can be like really sad and emotionally affecting. So it's like, and found footage is my thing. So it's just like catnip for me. And when I watched it in high school and I thought it was real for like a hot second. Cause I was like, it was babysitting. It was like something I found on, it was like on demand. Cause it was in that After Dark, do you remember that After Dark series where they would have.
What channel was it on?
So it wasn't a channel. It was like every year they would have this like After Dark series of movies that were like, it was like After Dark Festival. It was every year. I was After Dark. Hold on. Now I have to remember if that's the right name, because it was like a series of movies every year they put out that was under this banner, and they were all usually like direct to video, not great, but every once in a while they put out these incredible like foreign movies, After Dark Horror Fest. So it wasn't really a festival. It was more like they distributed these like 8 movies. They would go to theaters and they would mostly not be great, but like Mungo was in there and I watched it. And it changed my life. So that was a long-winded answer, but.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Such a good answer. That DVD has been in my shopping cart on Amazon for a while. I just haven't bought it yet, but it's one that.
This is your sign to buy it. And shameless plug, buy the Second Sight edition where I wrote an essay for the release of Lake Mungo.
That's amazing. Shameless That's awesome. Plug.
Anyway.
Yeah. I mean, shamelessly plug yourself all over the place. This whole episode is a shameless plug for yourself. So it's fine. So how did you first fall in love with the horror genre?
So I have been watching horror as long as I can remember. Basically, my dad was really into horror movies and always has been. And my first horror movie was Jaws because my grandfather was watching me and didn't think Jaws was a horror movie. But like when you're 4 and you see a shark attacking people, and it's like, you have no concept of like, sharks don't actually do that. You get terrified of the ocean for a couple of years. But it was one of those, and when I was one of those kids that was like really, really scared of everything, but I loved being scared for some reason. Like it was something that I just always was seeking out. So like, my dad would let me watch whatever. My mom wouldn't. My parents were divorced, that old chestnut. So like on the weekends, I'd get to watch scary things with my dad. And then during the week, my mom would She wasn't strict at all, but she definitely was a little bit more careful with like what was appropriate for an 8-year-old child to watch. But like I loved watching ghost hunting shows and like the X-Files, and she'd be like, "Mary Beth, you're gonna be scared if you watch this." I'm like, no, I won't." And then I would be terrified. It was like a cycle with me all the time. Her and my stepdad always laugh about it. They're like, "So funny that you were always sleeping with your light on, with your door open, and now here you are." I'm like, I loved it though. So I've always loved and been watching horror. I mean, I was the kid in high school who was trying to make all of her friends watch like Midnight Meat Train and Teeth at the movie nights. And I'd like have movie nights in my house and be like, "Oh yeah, we're gonna watch some horror movies." And I'd have like fucked up things no one had heard of. And they were like, "You can't keep picking the movies, Mary Beth. Like you're really stretching it."
We can't watch Cannibal Holocaust one more time.
Like one day my friends and I were like, "Let's watch Last House on," like not Last House, no, it was I Spit on Your Grave was like our slumber party movie. Like that was like what I was as
That's
a
amazing.
middle school and high school student. I was like finding weird shit. Like my friends and I were like, "Let's watch Peeping Tom." And like we found Peeping Tom online on like a sketchy website in like the mid-2000s. I don't know. Yeah. Like that was that horror has just always been like a huge part of my life.
So I always ask
Yeah.
everyone, why do you think that people who seem perfectly sane love the horror genre? Because we always get asked, like, why do we like watching all of this, like,
Oh, I get
horrific
asked all the
stuff?
time. Like my family especially, like ask even after I've had my job for 2 years, I've been writing about it forever. It's like always ask. But I think it's healthy because I think it's an incredibly cathartic experience to watch horror movies. I think for me at least, I think that there's something so cathartic about a lot of horror and being able to watch these terrible things happen. Because I have OCD and I have a version of OCD where my version of OCD is like intrusive thoughts. And so it's not as physical, but horror for me is cathartic because the weird intrusive thoughts that my brain likes to cook up, it's like they're being exercised in horror. And I think a lot of times, a lot of people feel that way. And even if it's not OCD, it's just like in general, it's just a cathartic experience. And I think being able to face like the horrible things in the world and understanding that there can be hope, I think is also like something that horror fans experience more than others in terms of watching, like just because of what we're watching. And I think people just think see the violence and everyone is so offended by violence and without thinking about like what that violence is trying to say. I think that's the other thing. People are so scared of violence without interrogating violence. And I think that that's really silly. I think there's an importance for showing violence in like media. Obviously, I'm not a violent person, but I think not showing violent sides, terrifying sides of humanity just shuts us off from like what makes us human.
Oh, that's so interesting, and I definitely agree. So I'm assuming that what scares you in horror movies has evolved over time. So what scares you in a horror movie today?
Yeah, so I used to be really scared of ghosts. Ghosts were like my number one fear. And now it's like home invasion horror. It's like number one fear. At this point, I'm like a ghost. I can fuck with a ghost. I can't fuck with a weird guy in my house who actually wants to kill. It's like I hear of this all the time, especially with people who have kids. I don't have any kids, but like a lot of my friends are having kids and interviewing people and like how their taste in horror really shifts as they have kids and as they grow up. And it is really interesting because now I'm like, I know the terrible things people are capable of. Like home invasion is the scariest to me. Serial killer stuff is the scariest to me because it's real. It feels more real. It's not a supernatural presence. It's an actual human being capable of that. So those kinds of movies are the ones that like are more likely to get under my skin. Yeah, those are the ones that really freak me out.
I saw in your work that you wrote an essay that was on the strangers.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk
I
a
have
little bit
all
about
three
that?
strangers' masks here. You can't see the other one.
You just like to bring the
Yeah.
fear into your home so
Oh,
it can't
that's and like
affect you.
again, once again, scariest movie I've ever seen. I have to have it hanging on my wall and reminding me of it every day. Like, what is like horror? Like, and that's the thing with horror fans that I think is so funny. Like, we get so fucking scared of these movies, and we have to own every piece of memorabilia from that movie to completely remind ourselves. It's like a badge of honor almost. Like, to me, it's like, I love this movie. It scared the shit out of me, but like, isn't it cool? Anyway, yeah. So I saw The Strangers in theaters. I think it's this year, was it? The 10-year anniversary, I think, was this year.
Wasn't it? Isn't it a 2000? 2008 or 2017?
Nope. Yeah, you're right. I don't know where the fuck. No, it was okay. Yeah, 20. Is it 15? Was this year? I think this year was 15. I think. Yeah, 15. I can do math. But it came out like my birthday weekend,
Oh, nice.
and I when I had turned 15, and my dad was like, my dad and I were so fucking excited for this movie. Like the trailers like weren't telling us anything. Like we were so excited, and then we saw it, and never been more scared in my entire life. Like we sprinted to the car. I couldn't sleep. And just like the whole conceit of that movie is downright chilling, and I'm obsessed with it. And Brian Bertino, who's the director, is one of my favorite directors. I think he has like one of the coolest filmographies. It's very small, but I think Brian Bertino is like the king of making nihilistic movies. It's like American nihilism, especially like post 9/11 stuff. And so I'm just obsessed with this movie and how simple it is, but how terrifying it is. Like, it's such an incredible example of having like limited resources and space and using it to maximum potential in the most fucking terrifying way humanly possible. And again, like giving them no reason to do it just because, like, the randomness of it too is just like chef's kiss.
Oh, yeah, no, I love it. I saw this in theaters as well. Yeah, and the entire thing is scary, but the scariest part is at the end when she's like, "Why are you doing this?" And they're like, "Because you were home." So that's
Like
why I couldn't.
fuck, man. Like that movie was what got me like interested in home invasion, but also scared me because like a lot of the time in horror movies, there's a reason. It's like I am some like
Revenge.
twist or
Yeah.
something. And it's just like, yeah, we were just bored. Like that is so fucking scary.
Yeah.
And that's why I hate being isolated because I'm like, I don't know who could show up.
Yeah, definitely. I live in New York City where there's people around all the time. So
But like
the suburbs are the
that's its
scariest thing
own terrifying thing though.
to
There's too many people like
me.
anyway.
Have you seen Funny Games? What do you think of that as a home invasion movie?
Yeah, I've seen both. That movie just makes me so viscerally uncomfortable in the way that only Michael Haneke can. Yeah, I mean I like The Strangers more, but only because Haneke's theatrics. I love Haneke's theatrics in that movie. Don't get me wrong. I just think The Strangers is a scarier movie. But Funny Games, I love the way, I mean, Haneke remade himself, an American remake of himself. Like, come on. Like, that's fucking funny. Like, that to me is like hysterical. Like, good for you. And I love the opening with like the opera music and then the heavy metal. And then it is such an incredibly well-made movie. I love Funny Games and it is even more brutal, and I have a hard time watching it because of the brutality too. And again, like I love brutal, but some of those moments in that movie, both versions, you're just like, I don't need to watch it again. It's like, ooh. That one feels more like a snuff film in parts than The Strangers. You know what I
Yeah.
mean?
Oh,
Like it's
yeah,
got
definitely.
snuff film vibes, and I'm like, ooh.
Well, because they're the killers are like turning to the camera and being like, "Hey, you're still
Exactly.
watching." So.
Yeah. And like that's the theatrics. Like it's cool and I love that. It takes you out of it a little bit, but
Yeah.
I purposefully, and like we could talk
Yeah.
about Haneke for a million years and all of his crazy
Yeah.
ways of drawing attention. But yeah.
Yeah, I love that he remade his movie in English because he was like, I think it was because he was like, people have forgotten just how scary just something so simple can be. And we need to expose audiences in English to that. So less subtitles. So I'm all for that.
I will say the original one is a little bit more brutal. Americans, which is funny, which is weird. Have you seen both?
I've only seen the American remake,
Okay.
so.
And like, yeah, his first one is even a little bit more brutal, I think. But
Okay.
anyway.
So I usually ask people what their favorite subgenre in horror is, but you told me ahead of time that you are pretty well versed in found footage and rape revenge movies. Are those your favorite subgenres?
Yeah, they are. Those are my
Cool.
two. If I see anything that is found footage or like rape revenge adjacent, I immediately am like flocking to it. Yeah.
Nice. What are your favorite in each of those categories?
Okay. So found footage. Yes, I love like I have a Blair Witch Project tattoo. Like I
Nice.
live in Maryland, like of course, but I'm not going to say that one because that's always everyone's listing and I just want to keep it fresh. And I already said Lake Mungo for my favorite movie, so we're not going to count that one. So Noroi the Curse, which is what this
Oh,
tattoo is from,
okay.
is a 2005 Japanese found footage movie. It's actually on Shudder. absolutely incredible. It's by Koji Shirashi, and he is a pretty prolific Japanese found footage filmmaker, actually. He's made Occult and Cult, and a lot of his movies are hard to find in the US. He's not like a well-known filmmaker in the States, but he's really prolific in Japan, and I have like haven't watched all of his stuff, but he's one of my favorites. He really melds like the ridiculous and the horrific and cosmic horror together really well. Another favorite is Cronenwood, which actually it's a 2016, I think it's 2016. Yeah, 2016 British, Irish found footage movie that does some really cool stuff actually with sexual assault, but of men and not women, which I find very fascinating because we don't ever really see sexual assault of men on camera. I also really love Gone GM Haunted Asylum, which is one of the scariest movies I've seen recent, like in the last couple of years, which is it's a Korean found footage movie that's fucking terrifying. And then another really good one that is and my go-to is like As Above, So Below. That's a more mainstream one, but I love As Above, So Below. And like obviously Paranormal Activity, but obviously. Yeah. For Rape Revenge. So I wrote my master's thesis on women directed rape revenge movies. So like that's my even more hyper specific focus. So like Revenge by Coralie Farché is my like favorite movie. Example, but I also really love Violation, which came out at Sundance a couple years ago, which is like one of my favorite, like Revenge is like the fantastical rape revenge movie. And then Violation is the more like grounded one. So those two are like my favorites, but I also really love MFA, which was directed by Natalia Lee, which is about sexual assault on college campuses.
Oh, wow.
And that one's really cool in terms of like the avenging angel. If you don't watch Promising Young Woman, watch MFA is all I will say. I do not like Promising Young Woman. That's a whole other thing.
Okay.
But, and then Rose Plays Julie is another really good one.
Oh, I will have to look those up. I've only seen Revenge on that list. Maybe I've seen Violation, but I don't think I have.
They're all like pretty smaller releases, but like, again, like they're more modern contemporary rape revenge movies, all directed by women. So they're not like, obviously I Spit in Your Grave and Last House. I love the remake of Last House on the Left, and those have like a place, but these movies are very different in terms of how they approach the subject matter. And I really like that. So I highly recommend.
Yeah.
If you were in the headspace to watch them, like obviously
they're going to be triggering.
They're going to be a lot to watch, but I promise they're really well done and it's all handled very well. It's just still, you know, it's the subject, the inherent to the subject matter. But
yeah. Like 10 years ago on July 4th weekend, I was at my friend's house and we were like, let's watch a horror movie. We put on the remake of The Last House on the Left, having no idea what it's about. And then we're like, I feel great now. We're like, what is going on?
At least it wasn't the original one, because that's even more oof.
Mm. Yeah.
Ugh. Wes Craven, we love you, buddy, but holy shit, dude. Anyway.
didn't Wes Craven direct porn before that? Isn't that?
So I think he did Last House on the Left, and then he did a little bit of porn as Abe Snake, and then he did, hold on, I was literally just talking about this with someone, because one of the comps for the movie I directed is Last House on the Left. And we were talking mm-hmm. about him and just like his incredible fucking career, like wild. Mm-hmm. Oh no. Yeah. I think he did. Oh, he worked on Deep Throat apparently.
Mm.
But yeah, no. So Last House on the Left, he directed porn before that, did Last House on the Left. Okay. Yeah. Cool. I wanted to get that right. Cause good for him.
Yeah. I met him once right before Scream 4 came out. Scream 4? Yes, it was Scream 4, because I was like, there another Scream movie? It's a perfect trilogy. But I've gotten over that. Did a talk at the New York Times that I went to.
Oh my god, that's so cool.
Yeah.
That's iconic. Oh, I'm so jealous.
So why do these two subgenres speak to you so much?
So, okay. We're going to get a little deep here. Especially with Rape Revenge.
You don't have to go into anything personal. We can skip the question.
Oh, no. As long as you're okay with it. I'm pretty open about a lot of that stuff. As long as you're cool with me. But with found footage, I've always loved found footage. Like, my dad told me Blair Witch when I was in middle school, which is like, And I used to go to camp in the woods in Maryland, like not near Burkittsville, but like to me, it didn't fucking matter.
Yeah,
Like that bitch
it's
was
woods.
in the woods. So I've always loved found footage because of seeing the Blair Witch Project at an incredibly impressionable age, because I was like, that was real. Like, I know it's not real, but it felt so real. And so I've always been so fascinated with that. I loved Paranormal Activity. When it came out, like I wanted to badly to see it in theaters. None of my friends wanted to go. So I did the, adult 14-year-old thing and found it online and torrented it. Sorry to the FBI, and watched it alone in my house and didn't sleep. And it's just always been such a fascinating subgenre. But then I really, really got into it during the pandemic. I watched As Above, So Below, and was just like, is found footage the coolest thing to ever happen? And so I like did this huge deep dive, and I'm still on it, where I think found footage is just like one of the coolest subgenres, and like it's so experimental, but like not in a flashing lights for 20 minutes kind of way. And you're like, what did I just watch? But like really experiments with form and technology in a really cool way. And I think like some of the scariest movies I've seen are found footage. I'm like, yes, there's a lot of bad found footage, but there's a lot of bad movies in general. And I think like found footage gets a bad reputation because it's so easy to make. So you can make a really bad one really easily, but like you can make a really bad, anyone can make a bad movie. So I think it's just like the coolest subgenre, the coolest stuff is happening in the subgenre. I don't think people give it enough credit for what it's doing, which is why I'm obsessed with it. And then with Rape Revenge, so I'm a sexual assault survivor, and I couple like maybe about like 7 years ago, if you had told me that I would have found healing in watching these movies, I would have been like, are you insane? But honestly, like these movies have been really healing for me, and I know that a lot of survivors have had that experience, some, and a lot of survivors don't. So again, it's like very obviously subjective, but for me, especially if movies like Revenge and Violation, these women-directed rape revenge movies, it's so much more accurate to like the catharsis in interrogating the male gaze and just the way our bodies are treated, but also just like, is revenge worth it? And not just in like kind of a basic way, but in a more complicated way. And I have found so much catharsis and like healing in those movies for me. I will say, being into it and watching rape revenge movies, sometimes you come across one where you're like, that person shouldn't have been allowed to make this movie. And that's kind of what happened, what you come across. But like, I just think it's a really important, I think it's a hard subgenre. I think a lot of people don't like it. And I totally get that. But it's really interesting because like, I'll tell men that I love rape revenge, and men will say to me, and I, caveating this, anyone can be sexually assaulted, not just women. Women are more like highly more proportioned to be sexually assaulted. But I've had like men who are like, oh yeah, I can't do it. And I'm like, I get it. But it's so interesting, like the reactions to rape revenge that people have, and the what people think of rape revenge versus what it's become in the past like 5-ish years. I just think it's really fascinating and really cool. And I think there's really cool stuff happening in that space.
It's really interesting that you've found healing and catharsis in watching these movies, and I'm so sorry that that happened to you in your past, but
Oh yeah. But like it is, it's not, again, not everyone. And like some people love, like, oh look, I already said it. I hate Promising Young Woman. Some survivors love it. And that's awesome. And I think that's what is also really interesting to me about the subgenre is like the connections that some of us have to it and our like very subjective reactions to like the narratives. And I think that that is also really interesting if people are willing to talk about it, just like how we all process that. And I also just like going off of that, I think a lot, there's like, I'm just like stuck on the puritanical bullshit on Twitter recently about like, we don't need sex scenes in movies. And it's like, okay. And I see sometimes people saying like, we don't need to see rape in movies and in shows. And like, I don't agree with that. I think we can't avoid those things, but they need to be done carefully. That's the huge problem. So many movies and shows want to use it as just like a fucked up spectacle plot device rather than like thinking it through. And that's the problem. I think that we need to be able to talk about those things like in our films, in our horror, But I just think we need to approach it more carefully than just like, oh, look at this really fucked up thing that happened to her, and like making it, like you said, just about the violence rather than more than that.
Yeah, that's so true. I find that a lot of men don't want to watch rape revenge horror movies, and they also don't want to watch things like The Handmaid's Tale, because they're like, that's just too weird for me. I can't believe anything like that. And I was like, okay, well,
it's like I know you don't want to face it, brother, but like, that's my life. So like, maybe you should just like.
Did you see the 2019 remake of Black Christmas?
I did. I love it. I don't care what all the fucking haters say.
Oh my God, I love
it.
I fucking love the
2019 Black Christmas. It's so good. Fuck the haters.
Because I found my person.
I love it. It's not perfect, but like, are you like, it is what Black Christmas needed to be in 2019.
Yeah.
And it was for teenage girls and young girls and young women to see that, like, you don't have to take this fucking shit. And that was what the original is one of my all-time favorite horror movies. I almost said Black Christmas is my favorite and I love Black Christmas. Black Christmas talks about fucking abortion for like a good, like, abortion's a big part of that movie. Like, and this one, yeah, it's not the same, but like, I don't know. I liked it a lot. I think that, especially with like knowing what Sofia Takala, director, and April Wolf, how much time they had to make it and like what they were trying to do, like, I think it's incredibly impressive. I loved it.
Yeah, I love it too. I once went on the podcast Hacker Slash to do like a rewind talking about it. And one of the hosts, Chris, she was like, I think people are going to look back in 10 years at this movie the same way that they look back now at Jennifer's Body.
Uh-huh. Exactly. That's exactly what it's going to be. It's like, this movie was ahead of its time. Like, yeah, it fucking was. Yeah. It was ahead of its time. And it was trying to be a PG-13 horror movie that was trying to tell, like, oriented towards girls. And this is what happens. Movies don't know how to market. Horror movies don't know how to market themselves to young women. And so it's like, it's going to get rediscovered as this like incredible, empowering narrative. And I can't fucking wait, because that movie fucking rules. And it's an incredible battle cry. And people were disgusting on the internet about that movie. It's like, why?
Yeah. Oh, I love it. And Imogen Poots is so good.
Oh, and I love her. Also, like, iconic name. I'm sorry. But like, Imogen Poots, are you kidding me? Oh, God. Oh. Incredible.
And Carrie Elwes. So yeah.
What, like, in that movie, not him, just like,
yeah,
he plays a good, like, vomit inducing character. Let's just,
he's an actor with such range. He could be a doctor, really, in Saw, or a creepy professor,
like, so hot and so awful.
Who are your favorite horror directors?
My favorite horror directors. Okay. Brian Bertino is one of my favorite horror directors. So he did The Strangers. He also did a found footage movie called Mockingbird. And he did The Dark and the Wicked, which is one of, I think, the scariest movies of the last like decade. Mm. And then did The Monster, which is my favorite. But I think he just hits nihilism so well in his movies. And I think he is just he's really good at making like these like really in-depth character studies that are also really scary. So I love his movies. Some of my other favorite horror directors. It's like, a lot of them are women that I want to have more opportunities. You know what I mean? Like, I love Karen Kusama. And like, I love Jennifer Kent. I want to see more from Nia DaCosta after she did Candyman. You know, I feel like I should name like the big guys, but I don't, I feel like everyone names the big guys. So I always name other, like other directors. Like, yeah, of course I love Wes Craven. Like, yeah, of course I love John Carpenter. Like, I love Tobe Hooper. I love all of them, but everyone loves them. So like, I also really love Kiyoshi Kurosawa, is a Japanese horror filmmaker. He did Pulse, which is like one of the best ghost stories ever, and Cure, which is another incredible serial killer movie. He's one of my favorite horror movie directors too.
Ooh, I'll have to look him up. I'm not familiar.
Pulse, if you want to be fucking freaked out by a ghost movie, ooh, Pulse, okay, is like,
all right, I'm in.
Yes.
I would love to have Sofia Takal on in like the holiday season to talk to her about Black Christmas 2019. So fingers crossed.
Oh, Amy Simetz, She Dies Tomorrow.
Oh,
babe,
yeah,
one of the best movies. You gotta see it.
Yeah,
Amy
Simetz. I've seen that.
Oh, you have. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. It was no. It was interesting. It was very, if I remember correctly, there was a lot of dread, a feeling of
yeah,
dread
and
the
like
entire time.
I'm like a vibes heavy dreadful horror kind of girl. So like just chicks walking around with music and like and dread, all I want. Yeah. And she did Always Shine too, which is like not horror-ish, but just like fucked up.
Okay. So you've been the editor-in-chief of Dread Central since 2021. How did that opportunity come about?
So I was just talking about this yesterday, actually. So it was funny. I initially was going to come on to help with social media, and then it kind of evolved into the job it is, all thanks to Preston Fassel, who is an incredible writer and author. He's just like a real, and he's just like an incredible person in the horror community. And he, you know, sent me the opportunity, and it evolved from social media into a bigger role. And it was like one of those things that like kind of fell into my lap. And it was a really fortuitous moment, actually, because my day job, I was like on the verge of quitting and just saying like, I don't have a job, but I'm gonna make it work because this job is like not it. And it fell into my lap like right as I was trying to plan my exit strategy. So it was kind of, it was nice. It was like a serendipitous kind of situation.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I'm at that point with my job too. So, oh God.
I know. Well, and like, so like I had been writing, so I was a freelancer for a very long time. So like I was a podcaster, I was writing for a bunch of different sites. So like I was writing about horror. It wasn't my day job. And I never thought it would be. Like, I'm so fucking lucky that this is my day job. Like, I think about it all the time because like I was working different, like I wasn't working in film at all until 2 years ago. Like I was working at nonprofits. I was doing social and digital media for media companies. I was in grad school. Like I was doing a lot of different stuff just to like, you know, pay the bills because there aren't a lot of opportunities. So I don't know. It's just, it's really cool. And I never forget how lucky I am to have that. It's like my day job now. Yeah.
Did you go to school for film or writing?
Yeah, English. I was an English major, film studies minor. I wanted to be a professor, actually. Like my goal for the longest time was to go into academia, which is why like graduated from college, worked for a while, hated it. Hated working in the, I worked for Discovery Communications, LOL, before everything. And then I worked for National Geographic, like doing social media. And I was just like burnt out. So I decided, well, I'm burnt out. I'll go to grad school. Like that'll fix it. Stupid idea. Not my smartest move, but I went to grad school and it was like a special program that was like an intensive to prepare you for PhDs. And then as soon as I was done, I was like, nah, I don't want to do this. Like, I don't think my skill set will be best used here. And I had so much debt. I just like, it wasn't going to fit. So I came back home, moved back home and was just like, got a job and just sort of kept writing and just was like content with that until I got this really cool opportunity. So
what are some of your favorite articles that you've written?
Ooh, good Lord. Written too much. I think I've gotten to write some really cool shit. Like I'm really lucky that I've had editors when I've like come to them with like my weird ass ideas. They've been like, yeah, that's cool. I'm like, yeah. One of the earliest articles I was super proud of was an article I wrote for Polygon about Satoshi Kon and Perfect Blue and how it predicted stan culture in our contemporary moment. I wrote a really cool article about like found footage creature features for film school rejects when I was working for them. I've written some really awesome articles for Dread Central. It's hard to write when you're editor-in-chief, I've learned. Like, you don't have time to write. Yeah. But I've written some cool... I've tried to give myself some space to write. And I wrote a really article I was really proud of, actually, about Black Christmas and abortion when Roe v. Wade was overturned. So I wrote about that. And I also wrote an article about Barb's character separately and how she's bisexual and how that means a lot to me as a bisexual woman. And another article I'm really proud of is that for Bright Wall Dark Room, I wrote a really long essay about MFA and like the importance of that movie. And it's like a bunch of others. I don't want to bore everyone. There's a list of articles. As I have distance from things, because like when you're a writer, you're so self-critical. But then I'm really proud of some of the stuff I've written about because I've also written some silly shit too. And I love that. Like I've had a really cool opportunities where I've gotten to write some really serious articles and some like ridiculous articles, and that's really fun. Like that's why I like being a writer, because you can just If you can write a good pitch and convince someone that you're going to do a good job writing it, then they'll let you write it. So like that's pretty fun.
Oh, that's awesome. I know that yesterday you put out an interview with the Purge creator, James DeMonaco, about the legacy. Are you a fan of that series?
Yes. And he is like the nicest man. Like I did
Oh,
not know
that's so
what to
nice.
expect because I was like, oh my God, like you're like a legend. And like he is a guy from Staten Island who is like, I don't know the fuck this happened to me, but it's pretty cool. And we just like talked for like 30 minutes and had the best conversation. Like he's so nice. And I learned he was just like so cool. And this is why like I love my job because I get to talk to people like that for like 30 minutes and just like hear their cool stories. Like that's fucking cool. And he was just so generous with his time and like he just shared a lot of really cool stories. And it's just cool to get to know these people because I think we as like everyone, we like put celebrities and like people who are famous on like a pedestal and then you talk to them and it's like they're just a
Yeah.
dude who likes watching Yankees baseball and like is just like hates like the way the world is going. And it's just so cool to get to pick his brain. So yeah, it was a neat conversation. And again, like the nicest guy. Like I want to like hang out. I want to go to a baseball game with him. I feel like it'd be so fun.
Which is your favorite Purge movie?
I think the original one.
Right.
Yeah, the first three are my favorite, which are like his original trilogy. I think they kind of go off the rails a little bit. But again, like The Purge is an off the rails franchise, so like I get it to a certain degree, but
Yeah.
like the first three are like my favorite.
Do you have any advice for somebody who wants to get into horror writing?
Yes. I'm trying to think how to put it. It sounds like so cheesy, but it's like never lose sight of why you're doing this. I think what's really hard is once you start writing, you get kind of sucked into like you want to compare yourself to other writers and like who's getting opportunities and like what should you be pitching to get to the next big outlet and to like make that next big step. And I think it's important to have those goals, but I also think it's important to remember that like you're writing because you love horror and you need to remember that like that's why you're getting your articles accepted if you're pitching. Like your passion is what matters. Like don't try so hard not to compare yourself to other people. And like I could fucking learn a lesson from like I could practice what I preach, but I think one of the biggest things as writers is like it's so easy to want to compete, but like I think what you need to do is one, support other writers instead of seeing them as competition, and two, like just try to remember why you're doing this and like what you want from it and keeping that passion and not letting it devolve into simply competition because I've fallen into that and like it's a really good way to burn yourself out and to make yourself hate what you're doing. And I think you just like try to keep the perspective of you're doing this because you love writing about horror. And obviously, if you have other goals, that too, but like don't get bogged down in trying to be like everybody else, other journalists, or like don't get upset if you see someone get a byline you wanted. Like celebrate them, don't be mad at them. It's really easy to see other writers as competition. And I just think it kind of makes writing so much more exhausting. And yeah, I think that's a big thing that I've learned. And also like learn how to write a pitch email. And but when I say learn how to write a pitch email, I don't mean that as an insult. Like there's an art to writing a pitch email and it's hard to learn because no one tells you. And you know what? I'll tell you right now. When you want to pitch me, and I tell my pitch, big words, colon, tentative headline, and then write me 4 to 5 sentences about why you want to write this, and that's it. One pitch in an email, that's all you need, baby. Some writing samples if you've never written for me before. Bam, you're good.
Nice. Nice. So
My 2 second
everyone listening.
how to write a pitch email. But no
That's
one teaches you
amazing.
how to do this shit. No one does. Like, I mean, I didn't go to like journalism school, so like I don't know if they teach you how to do that there, but like no one teaches you how to do this shit. A lot of this, like all of myself was self-taught in learning how to do this. Like I was just like Googling people's names and stuff. So like if I can help spread a little bit of knowledge about like how to get your foot in the door, then I hope that helps somebody because there ain't no resources out there unless you find your group. So yeah.
That's awesome. So you just went into post-production on your directorial debut, a movie called Bystanders. Can you tell me what it's about and when we can expect to be able to see it?
Yeah, so no date yet. We are still deep in post-production and editing, so do not have any dates yet. But I will say it is a rape revenge movie. that follows three groups of characters that then intersect very violently. There's Claire and Gray, who are a couple going to a wedding. There's Abby, who is a young girl going to a party. And then there is Cody and the group of frat boys, who are up to no good. And when Cody and his frat boys drug Abby and her friends, they rape them and then set them loose in the woods to hunt them down. Abby finds Claire and Gray as they're driving home, and then the frat boys find all of them, and we find out that maybe there's more to Claire and Gray than we think.
Well, that is quite the elevator pitch. I'm excited.
Yeah.
And scared.
It's like a feminist Last House on the Left with frat boys.
All right. All right.
Cool. Very bloody. It's definitely very bloody. Lots of death. We wrapped filming end of July, so it has not been very long.
Nice. When do you hope to get it into festivals or theaters or
next year?
Next year.
Next year, I think, is the goal. Yeah, we filmed for 12 days in rural Kentucky. I lived on set. We have a cabin that's like our main setting, and I lived in the cabin with our writer and our producer for 3.5 weeks. Incredible indie, like the whole thing was like such indie DIY filmmaking. It was awesome and exhausting, you know, like it was so cool, and then also like, dear God. So
oh well, I hope to see it soon next
year. I hope everyone sees it. I mean, I hope they like it.
And as if you didn't have enough on your plate that you're doing, you're also writing a book on Paranormal Activity. Just to clarify, is it the Paranormal Activity franchise or the phenomenon of Paranormal Activity?
So it's about the first. Yeah, what's wrong with me, by the way? Like, I know, like, nuts. So it's from Die Die Books Publishing, which is a new indie press. They put out two books so far. And their whole conceit is every book is about one horror movie. So they put out a book about Threads, which, if you haven't seen that, horrifying.
I have not, but I've heard a lot about it, and I won't watch it, probably.
You know, I don't think. It's really, I've seen it twice. It's really good, but it's a lot. And then the second one that just came out is about Poltergeist, which is incredible. They're both so good. And so mine is about the first Paranormal Activity. And just the way that I'm approaching it is looking at like how paranormal, like the first Paranormal Activity, like both reflected so much about culture at that time, but also how it shaped horror cinema, like going forward. So there's going to be a lot of like analysis of gender, shocking for me, but then also a lot of talking about like changing camera techniques and the possession movie. And then also looking at like the end of the book kind of looks at the reflects on the franchise as a whole, but it's mostly just about the first movie and like analyzing it and all that good stuff.
Oh, that's awesome. When is it going to be out?
When I finish it. Don't tell my publisher. I'm sorry, Nick.
Well, that's awesome. I love the Paranormal Activity movies. I kind of like them all.
They're so good.
Yeah.
I love them all. Look, I know that some of them aren't great, but
there are worse movies.
There are worse movies. Like, I love the first one, but I think the third one is my favorite. Like, the oscillating fan is just so good. I love the first three. I really like the marked ones. And then Ghost Dimension, I didn't really like it. Xbox 360 one, I wasn't a fan of. And then I actually let mind the new one, Next of Kin.
Mm-hmm.
I know that everyone has a lot of thoughts and feelings about how it's not a Paranormal Activity movie, etc. But I really liked it. I thought they were trying to think outside the box with the franchise, and like it might not have been the most successful, but I think it was really smart. So
yeah, I can't wait to see what they do next. Are there plans for another movie?
I don't think so yet. I was telling someone, I was like, I would fucking love to direct a Paranormal Activity movie. I would love to direct a Paranormal Activity movie. It'd be so fun. I want to make a found footage movie next so bad. Like, one, I feel like I have to. I talk so much about found footage. Like, I gotta do it. But also, I just want to. I think it's like a really cool exercise in filmmaking. So I'm,
Much like with Jurassic Park movies and Jurassic World movies, I will just keep seeing Paranormal Activity movies as long as they keep putting them out.
I feel the same way. I'm the same way. And like, I know we have so many franchises like that, like Saw and like what are some other ones? Scream, that we're still getting stuff from. I mean, we're
yeah.
I know we're like in the we're in the era of like reviving franchises, but I like it when we're just still making seven. Like, I want Paranormal Activity 8. I don't need a reboot of anything. I just want the 8th Paranormal Activity movie.
Yeah, and like more Purge movies. Let's go.
Sometimes like you just want to, this is my thing. I know I've talked a lot about how serious I can be as a person, but and like how the like serious shit I like, but I also love like just fun horror. Like there's such a place for fun, like Malignant, straight up like what the hell? I love movies like that. So like as much as I talk and like have a more academic perspective on some things, I loved Renfield this year. I know people hated that movie, like were weird about it, but I thought that was so fun.
It
we
was
need
fun.
More fun. We need more fun horror like that. Like, yes, you know, we're in the midst of a trauma analysis era in horror, which I'm a little bit annoyed with because I think we have just forgotten why those movies are actually good. And so when someone just wants to make a weird, fun romp, I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm so in.
Willy's Wonderland was just incredible. Just
like
ridiculous.
I'm going to be real with you. I'm kind of excited to see Five Nights at Freddy's.
Yeah. Yeah. Apparently it was supposed to be made before Willy's Wonderland.
It's probably not going to be great, but like, I don't know. Fuck it.
It's not going to be too bad. It's going to be fun.
It looks like fun. And
yeah.
Sometimes I just want to have some fun with my horror movies. I want to watch Josh Hutcherson run and escape a scary animatronic bear.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, Benny loves you. I have the Benny that Dread Central put out over there.
Oh, yes, yeah, Benny.
Yeah.
Benny got a little shit. And I mean that in a positive. Like, I love that little shit.
Oh, it was so funny. So an article came out in 2020 that said that horror movie fans were handling lockdown better than non-horror movie fans. Why do you think that was the case?
I loved that. I remember on Twitter, we were like, horror people were laughing. It's like, because we watch so much shit about like the worst places people can be brought to. So we're just like,
we just have to stay home. That's it. Okay.
Like, we just stay home and watch movies. Like, damn. I think that horror people just expose themselves to such fucked up stuff all the time. And like, I think we're just kind of like ready for the horrors of the world. You know, we've seen the fictional horrors. And if this one is, you know, bad, great. We've seen it. You know,
definitely agree. Are there any horror movies that you won't watch at all or won't watch ever again?
Well, like I always say I won't, but then when I say that, someone's like, oh, I want to hear your perspective. I'm like, fuck, I have to watch it. Like Megan Is Missing was a movie that like I only wanted to watch once, and then I've seen it like four times. Like, why? There's not a lot I won't watch. Oh, you know what I won't watch? I won't watch like August Underground, I think is like my limit, which is like found footage, but it's like snuff films of just guys torturing women for like an hour and a half, and there's like vomit and poop and stuff, and it's just like, it's one of those things where like I can, people have like written about it, and I think that, you know, that's great. I just don't know if I need to watch that. I think there's something about that kind of movie that I'm like, I don't really know what the point is. Mm-hmm. And like, to me, it just feels like, I don't know, I haven't watched them, so I feel bad like passing judgment on these people who've made them, because obviously they've had an effect. I just sometimes think like the snuff films where guys are just torturing women on camera are just like a little bit sus.
Yeah.
And like, I won't watch, or I haven't seen, I really don't want to see Serbian film, like movies like that where I feel like, why?
Yeah.
Like Human Centipede, I saw that once. I don't need to see it again. Threads is a movie that I've seen and won't ever watch again, but not because of the other stuff. It's so, I have a hard time with like movies like that, like with nuclear war, because it's just so real. And I just don't, it freaks me out so much that like, I just can't, the anxiety, because I feel like it's so close to what could happen in real life. It's just that kind of stuff just like, ugh, like leaves an imprint for me. But most things I'll try. Generally speaking.
Yeah, I was speaking to someone recently who said that they won't watch Threads because even the trailer scared them too much.
Oh.
So I was like, oh, okay. That's good to know. I recommended it to a friend of mine who loves intense horror. So
I did once host a podcast called Watch Once Never Again. I don't anymore because I have too much to do, but Daxi Bobbin, who is my co-host, is continuing it on. And there were a lot of movies in that series that truly are like, I can't do that again. Like, we did a whole series on Lars von Trier. I'm not a von Trier fan. I, for a lot of reasons. So there were some movies where I was like, Jesus Christ, I can't ever watch that again. Some Michael Haneke movies, just movies that are like really good, but it's like, I don't need to put my body through that again. Me to do that again.
Understandable. Have you ever had any noteworthy experiences seeing a horror movie in theaters?
Oh yeah. I talk about this all the time, but like when I saw Hereditary in theaters, like iconic experience. Like it was opening weekend, all of it was like everyone was so excited. We didn't know what the movie was. It had all this buzz out of Sundance so much buzz. Everyone was so excited for it. And so it was opening weekend. And I was like, to my now husband, I was like, we have to go see it. He's like, okay. Like there were a couple moments. My favorite was when the moment where you see Toni Collette like in the corner and people were starting to realize she was there and like the echoing across a full theater of people was just like so cool and so fun. Like that was awesome. That is like my favorite theater experience as of like recently, because like that was like it was 2018. Yeah, that was just like so cool to have that experience and how everyone be silent and freaked out at the same time. And then second place goes to when I hosted a screening of Skinamarink at an Alamo Drafthouse nearby. And like when I tell you that like the vibe in that theater was the most uncomfortable I've ever felt, and like it was positive, it was like so silent. Like I've never been in a more silent movie theater, and it was like so fucking scary. I loved it. I don't know. Have you seen Skinamarink?
Yeah, I saw it in theaters when it was in theaters for like a minute in New York.
What did you think of it? Did you?
I thought it was really tense. I didn't understand that all of their doors and windows had disappeared. So I was like, why don't they just leave? So that was my...
That is a pretty key. Yeah. And again, I know Skinamarink is another one of those movies where like, that's Mary Beth Catnip. But for a lot of people, you're like, I'm sorry. What? Yeah. Like my husband threw me a surprise Skinamarink themed birthday party this year.
Oh my goodness. Send me photos. I need to see those.
Oh my God. Yeah. So like I bought the phone on Etsy because I'm psycho, but they're not that expensive, but the new ones are like cute and like plastic. And this is like the old school wooden one from the movie. And I found it on Etsy for like $10. And I was like, well, I have to have one of these in my home.
You're and like, so, I want it to look yellowed and like it's been covered in.
Oh, I want it to look like it's cursed. Like I need it to look cursed. And so he like, got huge things of butcher paper and put them over the windows so it looked like we didn't have any windows, and then he covered the door. Like I walked in, and then when I came in, he immediately covered the door and put like, you've been Skinamarinked, and had like the cartoon playing on the TV when I came in. Had Legos all over the table. It was really cool. It was awesome. I'll send you pictures. But yeah, it was cool. So anyway,
I watched Skinamarink, and then my friend watched it a few days later, and he was like, so I think the entire budget was spent on Legos. I was like, maybe. I was like, there were a lot of Legos. Somebody probably stepped on those.
I think were all Kyle's, though. I think they were all his like childhood Legos. Like most of that stuff was just like in his childhood house. But my favorite was when people were calling out like, that Lego wouldn't have been in this time period. And Kyle's like, what the fuck? Like locking my Legos, like the era of my Legos. Like horror fans are nuts. I'm like, horror fans are nuts. And I mean, I would love, but our attention to detail sometimes is like.
Yeah, I remember there was something last year. Oh, there was a song in one of the Fear Street movies. I think it was that they were like, that wasn't even out at that time yet. And I was like, just shut the fuck up. Just enjoy
the movie. Shut up. Yeah. Who cares?
I had the opposite experience as you at Hereditary in theaters. I loved it, but you saw it with your now husband. I saw it on what turned out to be a final date with somebody, and I don't know if it was because of the movie choice or just me.
At least it wasn't Midsommar. That's an incredible date night movie. Just kidding.
I saw that with somebody that I was in a relationship with at the time. So.
Oh, but at least you weren't like on a first date or like in the early dating process. Still fucked up seeing that with anyone you're in a relationship with. Like,
what has been your favorite horror movie that you've seen so far in 2023?
Oh Jesus Christ, hold on, I gotta pull up my letterbox because I watch so many movies for work I like sometimes forget. So movies that I have seen in 2023, because there's a lot of movies that came out this year that I saw last year, and it's like confusing because of festivals and
Yeah.
whatever. Because there's some really good stuff that finally came out this year, but I'm gonna eliminate those because I'm just gonna give myself some parameters here. I think one of the best movie I've actually seen this year so far is The Passenger by Carter Smith.
I want to see that.
So Swallowed was his movie that also
Yes.
came out this year. Year of Carter Smith, queer horror forever. It is queer horror is having such a moment right now, and I hope it continues. It makes me so happy. But Carter Smith did this movie for MGM Plus and Blumhouse. And so it's one of those, like, it was like basically a made-for-TV movie. It stars Kyle Gallner and Jonny Berchtold in this like fucked up road movie about toxic masculinity. And like, it's so good and it's so well done. And it's this beautiful look at like masculine intimacy between a bit platonic intimacy. And we don't see that ever. It's always like dudes being like super like macho. Or like, you know, male friendships are such like a very specific thing in cinema, and this expands that in a really interesting way, and I love it. And it's so sad and heartbreaking and violent, and it's just like really, really fucking good. So if you please watch that if you can, like I highly recommend that. Another really good one. Oh God, I've seen some really good shit this year. Another really good one that a lot of people have talked about, Juicera, the Bone Woman from Michelle Garza Cervera. Queer pregnancy horror. Have you seen it?
I did. I was a little bit bored by it. I felt like nothing really happened in
Okay,
it.
fair. I loved that one because it's just like queer pregnancy horror.
Yeah,
And
I
like,
hear
it's
that
just.
like everyone loves it. I was like, what am I missing?
Yeah, and again, like, you know, not everyone's gonna love everything. And I know you, it's a little slow. It is slow in parts. And then Horror in the High Desert 2, Minerva is a found footage movie. If Horror in the High Desert, incredible. Horror in the High Desert 2, even fucking scarier. So if you wanna be scared, watch Horror in the High Desert 2. It's on Prime Video. I think you can rent it for like a dollar, like a couple bucks. Dutch Marriage, another queer filmmaker, is such a little angel, and his movies, he's really good at scares, and he's gonna make five of these movies, and he's working on the third one right now.
Oh,
It's
wow.
really, the lore is like, what he is making is really, really fucking cool. So definitely try that one out, especially if you like found footage and you haven't seen that.
Okay.
And then I'm just scrolling through to make sure I'm not forgetting anything. Oh, I do have to shout out one found footage movie that came out as of September 1st, Chad Gets the Axe. Best influencer screen life found footage movie to
Okay.
date.
Awesome. I will watch that.
A lot of good movies have come out this year, and a lot of them are indie. So I'm like trying to like shout them out because
Yeah.
we all know the big ones, but I'm like, what are the movies? Oh, I'm sorry, one last one. Saint Drogo, it's queer.
Okay.
From the guys who did
Awesome.
Drop Death Gorgeous. It's like queer, ultra indie, low budget, full horror, eyes wide shut, but gay and with monsters.
Awesome. I will put all of those on my list. I interviewed Carter Smith earlier this year, and I really wanted to see The Passengers because I love Gallner so much. So that's like top
He's
on my list.
Kyle Gallner in this movie. Like he's so good in everything, but like the emotional range, like he's the bad guy. That's like not because there's not really a bad guy in that movie that's reductive. He's like supposed to be the bad guy, but his emotional range in this movie is so good. Like I'm so glad Kyle Gallner is having even more of a resurgence because like we saw him in the like late aughts and like you know he was like a younger teenager like a teenager actor and now he's like really getting to act his ass off and it's so awesome that everyone keeps giving him work because he's so good and
Yeah.
he's like really sweet he's also just like the sweetest person on the planet he's just a very nice guy
Oh, I'd love to interview him or meet him sometime.
and Carter well Carter's a friend of mine so like obviously I'm saying this but like he's also the nicest guy like two movies in 1 year.
I
Fuck you.
know.
I mean, he made them obviously, took way longer, but still, it's just
Yeah.
funny.
So on the flip side of that, what horror movie are you most looking forward to seeing in the rest of
Oh, it's a good question. What am I looking forward to? I have to look at the list I made the other day because they all love my. So I'm really stoked for, like, I'm excited. I said, I'm excited for Five Nights at Freddy's. It's going to be fun as hell. I'm actually kind of excited for Pet Sematary Bloodlines. Like, it might not be good, but like, I swear to God, it's the one Stephen King property that women are allowed to direct. So I'm excited to see what they do with that. I love Pet Sematary. I actually liked the remake. Isamets was in the remake. I thought it was okay. And it's one of my favorite Stephen King books. So I'm just excited to see what they do with it. I am not that excited for Exorcist, but that's okay. And then, yeah, I think those are the ones I'm like most excited. I think they keep saying that there's supposed to be like a Strangers reboot coming out this year, which I'm really excited about, but I don't know if that's actually happening. I don't think it is because we haven't heard anything yet, unless like surprisingly happens. But I'm really excited about whatever the fuck that's gonna be. So we'll see. And then Poor Things. Yeah, that's the other one. It's Year of Frankenstein reboots, like Frankenstein stories, maybe. But I love Yorgos Lanthimos, so I'm excited. And all of the reviews came in from Venice, the Venice Film Festival. We're recording this on September 2nd, so like yesterday. So everyone's saying how good it is. So I'm excited.
Oh, awesome. Something to watch out for. Are
Yeah.
there any horror movies that you love that people generally don't like?
Yeah. I really love 30 Days of Night, the David Slade vampire movie that, like, I don't think necessarily people shit on, but people don't love it. But I will defend that movie to the ends of the earth. I don't know why, but like, I just fucking love it. I imprinted on that movie as a teenager, and I will love that movie forever. I love it so much. Like, I love, because I love vampires, but I love feral vampires. Like, I love vampires that'll rip you apart. I'm not like, I used to be really into like the romantic vampires when I was a teenager. But now I'm like, I want these vampires to fucking rip me apart with their scary ass shark teeth. So, and I also think Josh Hartnett is just like a fucking cutie. So I think, like, yeah, it's not perfect, but I just love that movie. And I
Awesome.
also, another movie I love, but two other movies I love that people generally pan: Dead Silence, the James Wan classic. Love that fucking movie. And Stay Alive, the William Brent Bell video game movie, where
Okay.
Elizabeth Bathory is the bad guy and comes out of the video game and kills you. That movie rules.
Oh, I didn't know Elizabeth Bathory was a character in that. I'll have to watch that now.
Yes.
Dead Silence and 30 Days of Night are on my list of new movies that I've never seen to watch in October of this year. So I have not seen those, but they're on my list.
Yay! Oh, I'm so excited for you. 30 Days of Night is definitely like the better out of the three I just said. Like, but Dead Silence, I think, is fucking fun. Whatever. Like, yes, you can complain all you want, but I think that movie rules. I think it does not get enough credit. And Stay Alive, I rewatched it recently. It holds up in my book. Yes, it's 2006 movie about video games, but like, I just think it's good. I like it.
If you could remake one horror movie, which one would it be?
Oh fuck, someone asked me this recently and I was like, God damn it, I don't know. I personally would love to make my own like remake of I Spit on Your Grave if ever that could happen. I don't know how, but like I would love to, because we had a remake in 2009, I think. We had the remake and then like a whole new trilogy. I want, give a woman that. I want a woman to remake it. I want to see what a woman would do if they got that movie, like got that movie. That is what I would love to remake. Like something like that would be amazing, I think, to remake. Looking at my pin board and thinking if there's anything else that I would want to remake. Like I said, I would love to make, I wouldn't want to remake Paranormal Activity, but I would love to make a Paranormal Activity movie. Like that would be fucking cool. And then, yeah, I think that's my final answer. I think I'm gonna
Awesome.
lock that in.
Awesome. So my final question is, if you had to spend quarantine with one horror villain, who would it be?
Would it be? Ooh, fuck, that's a really good question. Okay. Oh my God, who would I want to spend it with? There's so many options. I feel like I would love to do it with Chucky. I feel like we would vibe. I feel like if he, I don't know. I think that would, him and or Tiffany, I feel like they would be really fun. If like we just get like fucked up for a couple weeks. We just like drink a lot of liquor. Freddie would be fun too, but he would tear up my couch. So like I don't
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you got to think about these things. Well, thank you so much for being here. This was so fun. Do you want to tell everyone where they can find you?
Yes, thank you so much for having me. This was so fun. I love the questions. It made me like actually, it's like you always forget every movie you've ever seen. So,
Yes.
okay. So you can find me. I am on Twitter at MB McAndrews, MCANDREWS. I'm also on Instagram at MB.McAndrews. You can find me also on Blue Sky if you like that, at MB McAndrews. You can also follow Dread Central, which is where I work, at Dread Central on all platforms for all kinds of cool and kooky horror content. No, but like seriously, we put out some incredible articles, news, reviews, but also just like some of the best editorials I've ever read from like amazing writers across the internet. So check that out. I also host a podcast called Scarred for Life, where my co-host and I interview people in the horror community, a lot of directors, about the movie that terrified them as a kid. We have new episodes every Monday. So that's at Scarred Podcast on Twitter if you're so inclined to check us out. And we're on all podcasting platforms if you're interested. And yeah, if prefer updates about my book and bystanders and stuff, just follow my personal accounts. I tweet about all sorts of stupid shit all the time. So.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much again, and I hope you have a great rest of your Saturday.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. I hope you also have a lovely rest of your Saturday.
That's it for this week's episode of Who's There. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Mary Beth McAndrews, and thanks again to Mary Beth for coming on. I'll leave links to her socials in the show notes. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Who's There PC. And if you have any questions, comments, concerns, horror movie recommendations, or you'd like to be a guest, shoot us an email at who's there PC at gmail.com. Until next time, stay scary and never ask who's there.